Nebojša Kalajdžerović was previously the representative of Serbia and Montenegro while they maintained their uneasy alliance, but his heart was and has always been first and foremost with Montenegro, the land of his birth. I'm very honored to present Ambassador Kalajdžerović. Please.
Well, thank you very much. I am really delighted to be today with you, Ethigel, and your society approached me last year. Unfortunately, I was not really able to come to join you and to share some thoughts about great mysteries, great characters, great writers in my country. You know, we in the UN, when we want to say something or when we attending meetings, participating in some discussion, you know, we usually say, Mr. Chairman, let me just briefly explain the position of my delegation, and I promise I would be as brief as possible, and then endless stories. So don't let me do so. As Ethigel said, it's not easy really to say something about Montenegro, that is the youngest member of the United Nations, but it is a country with 1,000 years old history. So I have not yet really decided whether I should start from the very beginning or the very end, but let's go from the very beginning, and if you don't mind, I would like to share some thoughts about the history of my country that goes back to 6th century when the Slavs from the northern part of Europe came to the Balkan Peninsula. There were two waves, as we learned from history, one in 6th, the second in 7th century, and the historians taught us that the Montenegrins were in the first wave. We have to be among the first, you know. And then we started with the established first state that was called Duklja, old Roman province of Prevalitana. Duklja was and is still the first Montenegrin state that lasted 200 or 300 years and was led by the first dynasty of Vojislavljević in Montenegro. The second one that succeeded Duklja was called Zeta. Rulers were Balšić dynasty and after that Crnojević dynasty. And I don't really want to go to all the problems that we face with the Romans, with the Slavs, with Byzantians, Serbs at that time. Our country was erased several times from the political scene and then we succeeded to re-establish that under the different dynasties. And the third one was I would like just to refer to two dynasties. First one was Vojislavljević, second one Balšić, and the third, the modern Montenegro started, was Crnojević dynasty. And it is important for Montenegrin history at least for three reasons, and I would like just to mention three, all of them. First, the dynasty rule is a historical link between tradition that we have had and the independence of Duklja and Zeta, that from the point of view of some historians were often disputed. The second is that the Crnojević ruler, Ivan, moved the capital of Montenegro from the Skuteri Lake to the mountains part of Montenegro that is closer to the coast and formed it today's old capital, Cetinje. And the year of 1482 is the year that is considered as the official name of modern Montenegro. The third reason is that throughout the Crnojević rule of Montenegro, Montenegro remained independent, sustaining and extending what the Montenegrins regarded as really tradition of sovereignty, and that is something that we have been very proud of. Third one that may be rather most connected with this gathering is that the Crnojević dynasty is responsible for Montenegrins' claim of an unusual primacy in the cultural development of southern Europe. And that means it introduced the first printing press in the southern Europe and in printing the first books in the region. And that is, again, something that Montenegrins are very proud of. He used the printing press brought to then capital Cetinje by his father to print the first books in southern Europe. That was 1493. The Crnojević printing press marked the beginning of the printed word among the southern Slavs. The press operated from 1493 to 1496, turning out religious books of which five have been preserved, Oktoich Prvoglasnik, and I will read it in an original because I'm not quite sure whether an appropriate translation exists. Gerard Cernovich managed the printing of the books throughout prefaces and afterwards, and developed sophisticated tables of psalms with the lunar calendar. The books from the Cernovich press were printed in two colors, red and black, and were richly ornamented. They served as models for many of the subsequent books printed in Cyrillic. The end of the 15th century is the end of the rule of Cernovich dynasty. Then we come to the newest part of Montenegrin history, and that is first rule by bishops, or as we call it, Vladikas, and the rule of Petrovic dynasty, that ruled over Montenegro more than 250 years. What is important for this period? This period is period when Montenegro started being a state in the modern sense of that word. Despite the Ottoman Empire that was on the western and southern part of Montenegro and first Venice and later on Austro-Hungarian Empire from the north and west part of Montenegro, we had succeeded independent and sovereign. Sovereign not in modern sense of that word, because Montenegro became an international recognized state in Berlin Congress 1878, and Montenegro is 27th internationally recognized state, and we are 192 member of the United Nations. The difference is big. So we are the youngest one, but we are very, very old country. So through the period of Vladikat, as we call that, or the rules of Vladikas. Vladikas are archbishops, Orthodox religion, chosen by the people, in the people's gathering. So they were really spiritual leaders, and they are people leaders, and presented the leader in both sides. That tradition was broken in 1851, when one of the Petrovich Danilo I refused to be both archbishop and ruler, and we then became Principality of Montenegro. His successor, King Nikola I, proclaimed Kingdom of Montenegro 1905, and he ruled almost 60 years. Then, again, we come to a period when, although being a country on the right side with allies in the First World War, we different thoughts about that period of time. It's interesting, really. Today is 1st of December, the day when first Yugoslavia was formed. 1980, 1st December, and the day when Kingdom of Montenegro again was erased from the political scene. We lost our country, we lost the name, we lost our church, and our dynasty was expelled. So from 1st of December 1890, it is really strange that Montenegro participated in several forms of United South Slav states. First one was Kingdom of Yugoslavia, known as Aleksandar Karađorđević Yugoslavia. The second one after the Second World War was Titus Yugoslavia or Communist Yugoslavia. The third one, shrinking Yugoslavia after the breakup of former Yugoslavia, led by Milošević, was Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, the one that I didn't like, that I left after the broken Bosnia and Herzegovina started. On some personal note, was Union of Serbia and Montenegro, formed an insistence of international community and especially European Union to try to overcome some of the problems. Fortunately for the Montenegrins, we finally regain again our independence at the democratic referendum last year on 21st of May. And much to even my surprise, everything went so smoothly, because in our history, whenever we changed the status, it was usually, or it has been done in a different way than a democratic one. So Montenegrins are really proud about the way that we regain our independence. It is, I would say, one of fifth or seventh incarnation of my country. I honestly hope this is going to be the last one, even if we become, and when we become, member of the European Union and NATO. That would be another stage of our integration within European structure where we belong. But that stage would be, no doubt, in a democratic way. So this is, in brief, just a couple of features of the history of Montenegro. On a personal note, once again, I was a Yugoslav diplomat from 81, and I served in former Yugoslavia for 13 years and served here in New York first time as a Yugoslav diplomat from 86 till 90. When I got back to Belgrade, everyone realized that Yugoslavia needed really to be transformed, but I personally hoped it was going to happen in a democratic way, and I was very much in favor of that. I loved that country. But unfortunately, when we realized that things went in a different way, based on very, very strong nationalist movements from Serbia primarily, and helped by Croatia and some people in Bosnia, and the war started. Then I left diplomacy in 1992. I was on my own in Russia dealing with some private companies. That was as well a very, very interesting part of my life. I joined the Montenegrin diplomacy in 2000. The only condition that I asked was clear understanding that Montenegro broke up with Milosevic regime, and the leadership at that time told me that the prime minister, today president of Montenegro, is a very good friend of mine, but we are not as good political friends as we are today. And he told me, yes, you can count that there is no, we are not going back to that. And I joined the Montenegrin foreign ministry. I was assistant foreign minister, though it was a part of the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, but Montenegro has always had its own foreign ministry with limited possibilities. But regardless of, I was assistant foreign minister for multilateral affairs. And when the Union of Serbia and Montenegro was formed, the position of ambassador to the UN belonged to Montenegro, and, you know, I couldn't say no. 1 full year I resisted, because my own understanding of Serbian nationalistic policy, all the problems that we faced, but finally I accepted that, and to be quite honest, those were very, very difficult 2 years of my professional career dealing with, on daily basis, with Kosovo question, ICTY, relationship between Montenegro and Serbia, though a very challenging one, I have to admit. And finally, when Montenegro became independent state last year, I was, I would say, awarded to be the first ambassador of Montenegro to the United Nations. I try to be a little bit more informed, though I honestly want to tell you that I know, and we know in Montenegro, about Nere Wolf and the books and almost everything, and I have spoken with some of my colleagues and friends who are very, very familiar with that. And I heard that there are some of you that would be interested in going to Montenegro. If that interest still exists, just let me know. I can be of some help in that regard, at least concerning some people that you might meet there in my country. How come that Nero Wolf became a Montenegrin? I read something that the famous author was informed about Montenegrins by Slovenian writer Luis Adamic. And I read what Luis Adamic told him about a typical Montenegrin man. And let me, if you don't mind, just read it for the sake of better understanding. And he describes the Montenegrin male as tall, commanding, dignified, hospitable. He is reluctant to work. Accustomed to isolation from women, he places women in a subordinate role. He is romantic idealist, apt to go in for dashing effects to express his spirited nature. He is strong in family loyalties, has great pride, is impatient of restraint. Love of freedom is his outstanding trait. He is stubborn, fearless, capable of great self-denial to uphold his ideas. He is fatalistic towards death. In short, Rex had found for Wolf a nationality that fitted him to perfection. And when I read it several times and go word by word. And I can tell you that I would fully agree with this explanation of a Montenegrin male, except one that might be a surprise to some of you. Reluctant to work, yes. Accustomed to, those are perceptions, but most of these perceptions are true. Accustomed to isolation from women, I wouldn't agree 100% with that. This. He places women in a subordinate role, and this is something that struck me very much. It is a perception. We are a traditional society, very traditional society, orthodox society, we are a religious society, but not in the sense that we have such a faith that we are ready to do everything like in some other religions. The faith in Montenegro has always been closely connected with the fight for freedom, and that is a feature of the Montenegrins. But when he says that he places women in a subordinate role, it appears to be the case. It is a perception, but believe me, according to the experience that I have in my family, in our society, it is just perception. A woman has always played a very, very important role in our society. One cannot see that, and usually it is not seen in a sense that could be regarded the other way, but as a subordinate role. Believe me, if there is a feature that should say how women are important in society, that is Montenegrin society. Traditional, very traditional one, but the role of women in our society has always played much bigger role than it appears to be. So when we go to other features of a Montenegrin, I'm not a typical one, so don't look at me, but most of the Montenegrins are, I would say, of that kind, and if Wolf's fitted person in his books, I haven't read many of them, especially as you are, I think this describes very much what a Montenegrin might be. Love of freedom is our outstanding feature. That is something that is absolutely true. We have always fight for the freedom. We have lost our country's identity, as I told you several times. Territory, name, church, dynasty, and the rebirth of Montenegro has always been assured just because of that. Not just because of that, but mainly because of that. We wanted to go on our own. We don't have any problem with, basic problem with our neighbors, including Serbia, Albanians, Croats, Bosniaks, Muslims. We are now, let me just say a couple of things about contemporary Montenegro. We are very, very multi-ethnic. We are very, very multi-religious, a multicultural society. If I say that there are approximately 45% of people in Montenegro that consider themselves as pure Montenegrins, that is a specific understanding of the Balkans belonging to a nation. 30% of them are Serbs, 18% are Bosniaks or Muslims. They are still trying to find their own identity after the breakup of former Yugoslavia. 7% are Montenegrin Albanians, 1-2% of Croats, Orthodox by religion, I think 65-70% Montenegrins and Serbs are Orthodox. We have Bosniaks and Muslims that are Muslims, Albanians are half Muslims, no, majority of them are Muslims, a part of them are Catholics and a smaller part are Orthodox, Croats are Catholics. So when you put all the differences in a very, very small country like Maine, for your understanding, with 650,000 people, one can really ask what a country it is, that small country with small number of people with no doubt rich history. I have just tried to explain some of the part of our history, and I could go, you know, hours and hours and hours. So if the part of your exercise is here to hear some things about Montenegro, I have done what I think that this point is enough. If you have any question, specific one, either now or later on, whatever, I would be really ready to answer. I don't want to bother you with